opportunity to start again. The Jewish people are known to start again very often. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov used to say that when he started his day, if things didn't get off on the right foot, he would start again. He wouldn't wait until tomorrow to start again. He wouldn't wait next week to start again. He wouldn't wait for a particular meaningful checkpoint in time to start again. He would pause, he would press the reset button in his mind, and he would start again. Which is an amazing thing, to think that every moment of life is a unique moment. And there's always opportunities to start over. And I want to learn together a little bit how the parshios that we're reading now highlight that. Someone said to me this past Motzei Shabbos, I was walking out of shul, and he said, "Isn't it so sad that we just started Bereishis and everything's already falling apart?" And he was talking about the Chumash, meaning the stories in the Chumash. Look how quickly everything's falling apart. Adam and Chava are messing up Gan Eden, Cain and Hevel, and now we're making a Mabul. The opening parshas of the Torah, it's so chaotic. You would think, or you would hope, or you would dream, you would imagine that maybe the Torah could have a little stability to get us started. A framework of something that actually works. And everything's crumbling. But I don't think that's an accident. I think Hashem did that very much the Kavana. Hashem Baruch Hu guiding reality, as it were, even though there were people obviously making choices with free will, but Hashem, whose fingerprints, whose handprint is all over the Torah, obviously, was guiding the world to a certain truth, which is, you may have to start again, and you may have to start again, and you may have to start again. And that's part of the Avoda of Bar Cheshvan, as we'll talk about, that's part of what these parshios are about. And that's part of the hope and the opportunity that I think we have coming out of Yom Tov. We're trying to hold on to certain things. I'll begin with a story that goes back to the Mir Yeshiva's Yom Kippur that took place in Shanghai. Anyone familiar with this? That the Mir Yeshiva was on the run during World War II. They found themselves for a period of time in Shanghai, and they had an incredible Yom Kippur. An unbelievably memorable Yom Kippur that took place when the Yeshiva was on the run in China, in Shanghai. You can imagine, again, just the feeling of the world at the time. I don't know exactly what year it was. Obviously, a very scary time of world history, Jewish history. Yeshiva has been uprooted. Many people were not sure what was happening with their families and the like. And there was a very, very memorable Yom Kippur that took place. After Yom Kippur, the Mashkiach, Rav Chatzko Levenstein, sensed that many of the Talmidei Yeshiva were anxious, were nervous, what's going to be now? In other words, sometimes you have a spiritual experience and it's on such a lofty level, there's almost this fear, this paralyzing fear, how am I possibly going to be able to hold on to the emotional connection? And that's a healthy fear on a certain level. We went through Rosh Hashanah, we went through Yom Kippur, we went through a Sukkot, we went through Rosh Hashanah Rav, we went through a Simchas Torah, and now we're back in class, and life is moving on, and it's Rosh Chodesh Bar Cheshvan. We call it Bar Cheshvan because it's a little bit less exciting. And the question is, like, what was the tachlis? What was the point of all of Tishrei? All the mitzvot that we did, all the davening that we did. Can we hold on to it? Is it realistic to hold on to it? What should the feeling be? So Chatzko Levenstein spoke to the yeshiva on that Motzei Yom Kippur. He sensed, it wasn't a question that Bachram had asked him, but the great Mashkiach of Chatzko Levenstein sensed that there was a feeling in the room, where do we go from here? And he told the following mashal, which I always come back to. It's a very powerful mashal. He said, imagine there was a fellow who built a mansion. Spent a long time building this home. Put a lot of money, a lot of effort, a lot of time, resources into it. And this mansion is finally built. And he invites all his friends, and he invites his family, and everyone gathers around. It's going to be like opening day. He's about to invite people into his beautiful new home for the first time. Everyone's gathered there for a Sudas Hodah. And right before everyone comes in, a ribbon-cutting ceremony, if you will, right before everyone walks into his house for the first time, he says, wait, there's one last thing to do. The contractor, the fellow who had built the home, said, you know, I want you to put the finishing touch on your house. Same way when a sofa writes a Sefer Torah. And most people, when they, you know, fulfill the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, they don't actually write the entire Torah themselves. But sometimes the sofer will allow the person to write the last couple of letters in, to fill in the last letter or so. So I want you to put the finishing touch on your house. And he had this beautiful ornament, this decorative piece that he was going to add right on the top of the roof, which would reflect the sun, and the rays would shine down onto the lawn, creating a beautiful image. So he says to the homeowner, you know, climb up the ladder, and you're gonna put the finishing touch on the house, and all his friends and family are clapping for him, and he climbs up to the rooftop, and he's about to place this final touch on his home, when a gust of wind comes and sends the fellow toppling off the roof. He lands on the ground, he's totally dazed, disoriented, and as he's lying there looking up, almost upside down, he looks at his mansion in his disoriented state, and he says, "My mansion has fallen, my home has been overturned, my life is ruined, everything's destroyed, all my efforts are lost." And the people calm him down and they say, "No, no, no, it's okay, it's okay. The mansion is perfectly intact. What you built is perfectly intact. You've fallen, you slipped off the roof. Don't be nervous, everything's okay." Chatzvul Levenstein turned to the Bachram of the Mir Yeshiva and he said, "We have to know coming out of the month of Tishrei. Every one of us has to know. Whatever we did on Rosh Hashanah, what we did on Yom Kippur, what we did on Sukkot." He was talking about Yom Kippur, but I'm applying it to the entire month. It's ours forever. We may slip. We may not always feel Yom Kippur dick. I'd be very impressed if we did. It's realistic. We're human beings. We're regular people. We're getting back into a regular routine. But the mansion hasn't fallen. What we construct, the spiritual structure that we created in the month of Tishrei, is ours forever. We may not know how to access it until the end of our life. But what we built, whether we feel it in a deep way or not, we have to know that what we built is ours forever. It's a very powerful idea. It's interesting, after Yom Kippur, already the Maariv of Motzi Yom Kippur, we're busy, we're Slach Lanu Avinu Ki Chatanu, Machal Lanu Malkeinu Ki Fashanu, we're already apologizing. It's almost like the second Yom Kippur is over, we're already getting anxious that things are going to fall apart. We're already getting nervous. One of the greatest ways that we can try to hold on to whatever we accomplish in the month of Tishrei is by pausing right now. It doesn't have to be the second, but we'll do it together for a second. Just pause for a second. Think about the mashal I just shared with you. Pause for a moment. Take a deep breath. And don't be so nervous. Now, that might be an annoying thing to tell a person who's feeling nervous about something, right? You tell a person who's anxious about something, don't be anxious. That's not a recommended technique. But the truth is, our mindset, our attitude towards where do we go from here, and what is, now we're getting back into the routine, and the schoolwork's piling up, and the midterms are coming, and there's no Yom Tov in sight, Hanukkah's like a long way away. There's a certain, again, if I'm a spiritually inclined person, there's a certain nervousness that, a healthy nervousness that we might have. Where do we go from here? Turn over to the second side of the page for a moment. Let's learn the Gemara in Bava Metzia and the Maharal's interpretation. It's really a very, very deep psychological truth. Maharal discusses the Mishnah, Maseches Bava Metzia. What would the halacha be, says the Mishnah, in source number 7, Avedaso va'avedas aviv. A person has the choice. I can either recover my lost object or my father's lost object. So the Mishnah says, Avedaso kodemus. You have the right, you're entitled to take care, to retrieve your lost object first. How about Avedaso va'avedas rabba? What if it's your lost object and your teacher, your Rebbe's lost object? Shalo kodem, yours comes first. Ask the Gemara, what's the source? Why is it? Maybe it's selfish, maybe part of kibud av v'eim. I should first do for my father, I should do for my spiritual father, my Rebbe, I should. Says the Gemara, in the second line, Minahani Mili, what's the source for this? Amar of Yehuda Marav, Amar Kra, Efes Ki Lohiya Becha Evyon. The Pasuk describes in Chumash Devarim how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and again, there's a lot to figure out exactly what the Pasuk means, 100%. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a haftacha, or it's a hope, if we keep the Torah. Lo yiyeh b'cha evyon. You will not be impoverished. You will not face poverty. Evyon means like mataros le'evyon. You won't be poor. Lo yiyeh b'cha evyon. And lo yiyeh b'cha evyon. In other words, I have a right to take care of myself financially, to recover my lost object, before that of someone else. Shelcha kodem l'shel kol adam. You come first. Even before a parent, even before a Rebbe, when it comes to financial well-being, a person has the right to provide for himself. That's the halacha in Hilchos Kibud Av V'Eim as well. You have an honor, you have an obligation to honor your parents, but you don't have to necessarily pay for it. So if your mother or father says, I'm in the mood for a drink, so you say, fine, give me the credit card and I'll go buy your favorite coffee at Starbucks, if it's kosher, whatever, speak to your... Fine. Great. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. So says the Gemara, Kol ha-makayim ba'atzmo kach, sof ba'lidei kach. Then the Gemara has an interesting comment. The Gemara says, Kol ha-makayim ba'atzmo kach, anyone who fulfills this, sof ba'lidei kach. It sounds like the Pashut Pshat is, if Yehuda Amar Rav is saying, that if you're overly concerned with your financial well-being, if a person always puts himself first, so there may be consequences for that, but the Maharal takes us into the psychology of it. Listen to what the Maharal writes in his Chidushei Agados on this Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Maharal says, your thoughts matter. Or as a good Lubavitcher would say, trach good mit zaynben. Think good and it'll be good. Is that a real thing? Says the Maharal of Prague, yes, it's a real thing. Your mental state, your outlook, the way you anticipate things to be is often how it's going to be. Your mind has incredible powers. Writes the Maharal in source number 8, Perish, middle of the first line. Ki ha'odam bekal poel ba'atzmo yosem mima she'yifal bezulasim. The way that we impact ourselves with our own thoughts towards or at ourselves is even more impactful than someone else's interaction with us. You know why? Because if you think something about someone else, if they choose to think differently about himself or herself, right? So that becomes, there becomes a conflict. Again, it's all taking place in the realm of the mind. But when you think something about yourself and you accept that to be true about yourself, and there's no part of you that rejects that understanding of self, so you've kind of accepted that to be your reality and it will become your reality. That's an incredible idea. When a person acts upon oneself, so there's nothing that confronts them. You've accepted that this is me, this is who I am. Lo kasher yif'ol bezulaso. When I take action towards or against someone else, so there's a possibility they'll accept my advance or they'll maybe respond by deflecting. But when a person has a feeling or an action towards oneself, so there's nothing to fight against it. And the Maharal continues, he says in the middle of the third line, Kasher hu misyare min anius. What the Gemara is telling us, when you live a life where you're scared, what's going to happen if I can't pay for this or pay for that? I'm not talking about a person who genuinely is struggling financially, but if a person is living with an anxiety, maybe they have everything they need, but they're nervous. What would happen if? When a person is afraid of being impoverished, hare yitein la anius makom lif'al bo. So you're creating that new reality for yourself. And that could become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Says the Maharal, Ki kasher hu yare min davar echad, when a person is afraid of something, v'hu ba'atzmo maktin atzmo lifnei oso davar, and you make yourself smaller than that thing, you make yourself intimidated by that thing, whether it's a person or it's an idea, whatever it is, shuhu yare mimenu, uvizeh poel bo oso davar. That becomes your reality. And the Maharal says, and I'll prove it to you in an interesting way. He writes, he says, if I were to ask you, well, take a look, he says it here, it's on the page in front of him. He said, well, I'll share it outside because I'm being sensitive to the time. Rabbi Fine, I'm being very sensitive to the time. 3:25, shear's over. If it's not, everyone start tapping your watch. Okay, we're getting everyone to class on time today. So the Maharal says, if I were to put a 2x4, a plank of wood, over a raging river, and I asked you to walk from one side to the other side, you'd be very nervous to do so. If I were to put that same piece of wood on the floor right here in this room, here in Koch, and I asked you to walk across the room on this little plank of wood, you'd be able to do it with great ease. It's not harder to do it when it's suspended over a body of water, but you know what? There's a part of you in the back of your mind that says, but what if I fall in the water and make a fool of myself? So that makes it harder. The fact that you're scared that you might fall makes it more likely that you will fall. That's what the Maharal is saying. And the same thing is true when it comes to all spiritual matters. If I'm nervous, if I spend my time being nervous, the what ifs, what if I'm not a good enough Jew? What if I have a spiritual setback after all of my hopes and aspirations of Chodesh Tishrei, what if Bar Cheshvan turns out to be that bitter month that it sometimes draws its name from? So then that becomes reality. You've psyched yourself out. Realize that you can do it. Realize that certainly, like we started with, what you've built is yours forever, and that should be something to celebrate. But realize that there's no reason to convince yourself that it has to be a setback. And that fear of that setback, again, becomes the reality. Maharal says, if you meditate on the fact that you're going to be poor, that will make you poor. And that's true in the spiritual realm as well. If you feel spiritually impoverished, that will become your reality, unfortunately. Let's turn back to the front side of the page. What is the avoda of Chodesh Baruch Hashem? Today is Rosh Chodesh Baruch Hashem. What is the avoda? What is the focus? What is the task at hand in the month of Baruch Hashem? And really, what does the name of the month mean? Some say Mar means bitter. There's another interpretation, obviously, B'derach Drush, B'derach Hasidus, that's found in some Svarim. I saw it recorded in the name of the Amshinov Rebbe in source number 3. Rebbe of Amshinov, Zuchuso Yagen Aleinu, said the father. He said that Mar Cheshvan, where it's bolded in source number 3, is Lashon Amar Mar. When the Gemara quotes a passage, quotes a teaching, and then the Gemara wants to reference it again to further analyze it, to explore it more deeply. So the Gemara says, Amar Mar, literally, the master has said, Amar Mar. It's referencing, it's citing something we mentioned earlier. But loosely translated, Amar Mar means, you've heard about this before, now we're going to delve more deeply into it. Says the Rebbe of Amshinov, what is Mar Cheshvan? Tishrei is a whirlwind. We're running from one Yom Tov to the next. Right? This year, the way the calendar fell out, like every other day, Shabbos, Yom Tov, Shabbos, Yom Tov. Everyone thinks they're so funny on TikTok with their video. I don't even know what day of the week it is. Is it Wednesday? Is it Thursday? Right? We're so disoriented with such an influx of Kedusha in our life. Right? But it's true. It's a marathon of Ruchnias, and it's Kabbalistic. It's amazing. It's a wonderful experience. But at a certain point, you got to slow it down, and you have to be able to process it. And maybe that's what Mar Cheshvan is. Maybe it's like the Amar Mar in the Gemara, where you slow down and you go over it and you say, you know what, let me review it. Let me try to understand. What did I actually say I was going to do this year on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? What was I working on during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva? What was that good feeling I had at one point over Sukkos when I was reciting Hallel? And how do I come back to it and enrich it and to go deeper? You see, instead of approaching the month of Mar Cheshvan with this assumption that it's going to be a setback, it's going to be in the fila, it's going to be mar, it's going to be bitter, it's going to be a disappointment, it's going to be a letdown, and everything's going to fall apart, let's be proactive and positive. Let's build on the success of Tishrei. Not in a way that we feel burdened by the possibility of spiritual growth, but inspired by the possibility of spiritual growth. Let's go over it, and let's go deeper into it. I've been extremely excited to share this next Torah with you. I found this over Yantiv. I haven't had a chance really to share it with too many people. It's the long passage that appears in source number 2. It would really take us a long time to go through the whole thing, but it's such a beautiful piece of Torah. It's from the Sefer Ma'or V'Shemesh, which I happen to be learning with students in YU this year. The Ma'or V'Shemesh was of Columbus Kalman Epstein, student of the Noam Elimelech, one of the great Hasidic masters, an incredible teacher of Torah, and he has an explanation on the pasuk Ata Haresa Ladas in source number 1, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim Ein Od Melvado. It's a great pasuk. Every pasuk is great, but Ata Haresa Ladas. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Klal Yisrael, now you really know. Now you've really gotten to know Ki Hashem Hu Elokim, that Hashem is Elokim. Now you've come to really know God. Ein Od Melvado. And there is none other than him. Which of course, just to clarify, Ein Od Melvado, the Lubavitcher used to say, could be learned in 3 ways. The real way to learn it is the 3rd way. What does Ein Od Melvado mean? The simplest interpretation is Ein Od Melvado, there is no other God other than Hashem. In other words, Ein Od Melvado, there's one God, not 2 gods. That's the simplest interpretation. The second interpretation is not a statement of quantity, but quality. Ein od melvado. It's not that there's, come on, you need to tell me there's one God, not 2 God. That's too easy. Ein od melvado, there's no one like Hashem. In terms of quality, there's nothing like Hashem. Hashem's the greatest. That's level 2. Quality, not Level one is quantity, there's no other God. Level two is quality, there's nothing like Hashem. But the real omek, the truer depth of Ein Od Mavado, the way Chassidus explains Ein Od Mavado is, in truth, Ein Od Mavado, there's nothing other than Hashem. Everything is Hashem. We're Hashem. Every one of us is a manifestation of Hashem. Obviously, that requires a lot of explanation, but that's really the ultimate goal, to see the whole world as being nothing other than manifestations, expressions of Elokus, of godliness. Each of us in our own way, playing a small part, carrying that spark of the neshama inside of us to be that representation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this world. Again, big topic, which requires a lot more explanation. But using that and understanding that, let's go back to the phrase right before that. We've come to know Ata Hareis Ladas, now you know, Ki Hashem Hu HaElokim. Says the Ma'or of Hashemish, what is the difference between the name Hashem and the name Elokim? Let's go deep for a second. Different names of God. There are many names of Hashem. Hashem is called Kael, Hashem is called Shakai, Hashem, Yudke Vavke. That name appears 1,820 times in the Torah. That's like once every three psukim. Elokim, what's the difference between all these names? What does it mean? What does it mean, Hashem Hu HaElokim? So the Ma'or of Hashemish explains. He says that the name Elokim, Bereishis Bara Elokim, Elokim is Hashem's name of Midas Hadin, of strict judgment. What does that mean, Midas Hadin? It means the more, I guess, firm, demanding representation of Hashem, but it also means, in a certain sense, the more limiting version of Hashem. If you want to do something and you're told that you're not allowed to do it, so that's Midas Hadin. You're being restricted. You're being contained. Bereishis Bara Elokim, the way to read the first three words of the Chumash, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to make space for us, Bereishis Bara, the first thing Hashem had to do was Elokim. He had to contract himself. Hashem was all and still is all, but to our perception, Hashem needed to make space for us. Hashem needed to make a place for a world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu Elokim means pulling in, holding back. A level of restriction, a level of contraction, being mitzamtzim, holding back. What is the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei? What is the name Hashem mean? That's God's name of chesed, of kindness, of expansion. In terms of personalities, it's more like Avram as opposed to Yitzchak. Yitzchak is very reserved in the Torah. Yitzchak is Midas Hadin. Yitzchak doesn't talk a lot in the Torah. Yitzchak doesn't travel in the Torah. He stays in Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't move around a lot. Avram's running around. His tent is open on all sides. Avram's like very, very out there. Big Baal Chesed. So the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is Hashem's name of Chesed. The name Elokim is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in a more contracted, shrunken form, a more restrictive form. So explains the Ma'or of Hashemish. Explains the Ma'or of Hashemish. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to Klal Yisrael, Ata Harisa Ladas, now you've come to know, Ki Hashem Hu HaElokim. Think about that phrase for a second, based on what we just explained. Ki Hashem Hu HaElokim. He actually begins the piece, if you look at the first couple of lines, Lama Anu Omrim Achar Tfilas Ne'ila. Why is it that at the end of Yom Kippur we say seven times, Hashem Hu HaElokim, Hashem Hu HaElokim, Hashem Hu HaElokim? What are we saying? So we're used to thinking that that's our way of almost saying goodbye to Hashem. There are sources that indicate that way. That as a Kadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, retreats through the seven heavens, a Kadosh Baruch Hu makes his way from Rakia to Rakia, Hashem Hu Elokim, the presence, that Shechina that was felt in Shul, in our life, over the course of Yom Kippur, Lifnei Hashem Titaru, a mamish right in the presence of Hashem, and now we're starting to separate a little bit, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem's moving away, as it were. We sound the shofar, the tekiah gedolah, at the end of Yom Kippur. The same way the pasuk says that when you hear the sound of the shofar after Har Sinai, now it's back to being a regular mountain. You're no longer restricted where you're allowed to go. So we're saying goodbye to Hashem. Hashem Hu Elokim, see you around. We'll see you next Yom Kippur. There's a certain truth to that. There is a certain removal of that presence of Hashem as Yom Kippur comes to an end. But Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't saying that, and there's another way to learn what we're saying when we say Hashem Hu Elokim. So often in life, we think, after having a certain spiritual experience, now I understand. Now I understand. Let's say, I'll take davening for example. Right? Let's say you've really been working on your davening. You've really been working on your davening, and you've been listening to a shiur about davening, and you've been reading a sefer about davening, and you've been working on your davening. So you look at yourself after a period of time, and you say, you know what? Now I really know what it means to daven. I never used to daven. I used to open the siddur, I used to say the words, but that wasn't called davening. Now I really know what davening is. Now I know what the frame of mind for davening. Now I know what the words mean when I daven. Now I'm really davening. But as time goes on, hopefully, if you're a growing Jew, what happens? Time goes on and you look back and you say, you know what? I used to think that was davening. Now I really understand what davening is. Now I have a much deeper appreciation for davening. Shabbos. I used to not appreciate Shabbos. Now I love Shabbos. But I hope, I'm not saying for myself, I think I always love Shabbos. I hope I always love Shabbos. Right? But as time goes on, a person says like, oh, now I have a much greater appreciation for Shabbos. Now I have a much greater appreciation for Torah. Now I've really gotten to know Hashem. I'm starting to really meet Hashem. But a Jew has to live, a growing Jew lives with an attitude that Hashem, Hu HaElokim. Listen to what the Mor of Hashemesh says. Again, I'm sorry we don't have more time to learn it inside. I don't know why I even bother making the source sheets. We barely got to look at it. Hashem Hu Elokim, what a Jew is saying. You know why? Probably because I hope that maybe you'll take the sheet with you and you'll try to learn it with a friend. Hashem Hu Elokim, you're saying, what I used to call Hashem, what I thought was my big understanding of Hashem, as I grow, as I mature, as I travel further along my spiritual journey, I realize what I thought was full expansive godliness, Hu HaElokim. From my new perspective, I realized my old version of God was actually very small. And I want to get to know a bigger Hashem. I want to see Shabbos as being even bigger. I want my Siddur to be more alive. I want all my spiritual experiences, when I think I've reached that point called Hashem, that the full expansion of that idea, I mature to the point where I say, no, Hu Elokim, that's still a contracted form. That's still a shrunken version of it. That's not the real thing. And Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to Klal Yisrael, Ata Haresa Ledas, Jewish people, you're starting to understand that there's always more to grow, and that's not a pressure upon us. That's a schus. I tell my students all the time, I always say this, if a person falls in love with their Yiddishkeit, with their Judaism, you will never be bored. You will never have to worry about getting old and figuring out, like, now what? What do I do with myself? Now that I've lost my youthful vigor. In fact, we look up to our elders in a great way. We have a tremendous respect. As the Mishnah says, Ziknei Talmidei Chachamim, the Mishnah says that old, wise Jews are a source of pride. As opposed to Nebuch, a person in the world whose whole life is physical pursuits, as they get older, they just feel like, they're just forgotten. And they have nothing that excites them anymore. When a person falls in love with Hashem, Hashem Hu Elokim, you always have the opportunity to trade in your old version of Hashem, which you thought was such a big understanding. And now you say, you know what? It's even bigger than that. It's even deeper than that. It's even richer than that. And a person comes back to it again and again and again. And that's what we're really saying at the end of Yom Kippur. We're saying, now I know Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. Now I've met Hashem, but you know what? I thought before Yom Kippur I knew Hashem. Now I really know Hashem. And the fact that now that I've come to realize that, you know what? There was room to reassess and to grow. Let's do it again and again and again and again. Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. Trade in my old small version of Judaism for a bigger, more vibrant, more alive Yiddishkeit. And we do that again and again. And that's Mar Cheshvan, Amar Mar. We go back to it again and again and we look at it with a fresh set of eyes, and we keep doing it until the pasuk ends, Ein od melvado. Says the Mor of Hashemesh, Ein od, when is there nothing more to do? Only levado, when Hashem is alone in the world. But you as a created being, there's always more for you to do. There's always more for you to explore. Be curious about it. Be excited. Be curious in a good way. As far as say, how the Marishon and the Chava got themselves into a little bit of trouble in Gan Eden. Some of the Bali Wusser say it was curiosity that got them into trouble. They should have stayed a little bit more in the box. But there's a healthy curiosity a Jew has to have. go to the library and just like pull off a sefer you never heard of and just be curious about it. Learn it. Be inspired. Find a new concept that you've never heard before. And allow it to nourish your soul. And that's Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, over and over and over again. When you have this attitude, you understand, again, the first words of the Chumash. The Mor B'Shemesh doesn't say this, but I think it's simple to us now. Bereishis Bara Elokim. In case you don't know, it's in source number 4. Bereishis Bara Elokim. What does it mean, Bereishis Bara Elokim? So the way that some tzaddikim read the word Bereishis, you can read it as Beis Reishis. Beis Reishis. Two starting points. In other words, a Jew who's a growing Jew starts not once, but starts again. We already did the Rosh Hashanah. We already did the beginning of the year. We already started. Now it's already happening. But you can choose to start again right now. That's what Rabbi Nachman used to do over and over again throughout the day. If he felt that there was a moment that he wasn't capturing the moment, so he didn't say, whatever, today is lost, I'll start tomorrow. Start again and start again. Beis Reishis. You know how to have Beis Reishis, how to start more than once? Bara Elokim. By realizing that, you know what, I'm looking at the world through that lens of Midas Hadin, of Elokim. I'm seeing things too small. There's a lot more to learn. There's a lot more to explore. There's a lot more to enjoy. And then I overcome that anxiety of that responsibility of what? Of building a new year. Tav Shin Pei Gimel. Chodesh Baruch Heshvan. Rosh Chodesh Baruch Heshvan. Tav Shin Pei Gimel. We've got the whole calendar ahead of us now. What are we going to build? How are we going to construct it? Are we excited about that? Are we confident? Are we scared we're going to fall off the log and land in the water? Or do we have the confidence to say, you know what, I can do this. I'm not going to psych myself out. It can be a really great year. And I'm going to continue to build on the growth of Chodesh Tishrei. Unfortunately, in this week's parasha, we meet Noach. And we meet Noach in a very sad way. In sources 5 and 6, Vayachal Noach ish ha'adama ve'yitakar. Noach has a chance to rebuild the world. But that's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of anxiety. And Noach gets off his boat, and he plants a vineyard. Vayesh min ha'yayin ve'yishkar ve'yizgal v'sochal. And Noach starts to drink. He drinks to the point that he disgraces himself in a very embarrassing way. And Rashi comments in source number 6 on the words Vayachel Noach. Noach began with his planting. Rashi says Vayachel is a lashon of chulin, asa atzmo chulin. He made himself chulin, mundane. He did something plain, something regular. He should have done something grand. Shahayelo lasso tchilas b'netiyah acheres. He should have started with something other than grapes. You know, according to one opinion, the Eitz Hadas was grapes. And Adam and Chava were nechshol with grapes. Noach, you have a chance to start over. And Noach, maybe, again, I don't know, who am I to read into the psychology of Noach? He's an ish tzadik tamid. We have to be very careful when we start to assess Noach. But it could be on a certain level, he was scared. I'm going to start the world over again. I'm going to build it differently. And that fear led him, unfortunately, that pressure, that anxiety of what if I mess up, led Noach, unfortunately, to mess up. He became frightened by his own potential. And we do that to ourselves sometimes. Instead of saying, you know what? I'm moving in the right direction. I'm not going to allow my own thoughts about my own success right, stop me, or the anxiety of slipping away from that success. I'm not going to allow that to stop me from continuing to build on it. Hashem, hu ha'elokim, to build on it again and again and again and again. Lubavitcher Rebbe had a shliach. The story is told. Lubavitcher Rebbe had a shliach. Forgot to write down his name. Rav Yitzchak David Gruner. A Jew from Australia. He came to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he was heading back to Australia. And he said, Rebbe, what can I do? What can I do on the boat? The Rebbe said, I have something actually very important for you that I want you to do when you're on the boat. So he says, Rebbe, what can I do? He says, when you're on the boat, on the ride back to Australia, I want you to do something for me. I want you to take all of your anxieties about how difficult it's going to be for you to build the Yiddishkeit in Australia, and I want you to throw them overboard. I want you to throw them off the boat. He said, I don't even know how to do that. Rabbi said, I'm telling you, I need you on the boat. As my shliach. I need you. He was looking for what should I do on the boat? What would be a meaningful thing for me to do on the boat? The Rabbi said, I can see you're nervous. You have a big mission. Have a big responsibility ahead. He said to this Rav Yitzchak David Groner, I need you to take all of your fears about what might go wrong and throw it overboard. Because that's going to be the biggest impediment to your success. I need you to believe that you could do it. Think that you could be successful, and then you'll be able to come to Australia and be able to build. You'll be able to create incredible things without any fear that, what if it's not good enough? That becomes the impediment to your success. So I'll show you, if you just look in the final source, I'll show you something very interesting. For those who enjoy these types of Torah ideas. I found this in a sefer, an interesting little sefer. I don't really know anything about the author. Gave you his name, Avram Yishayahu Trop. He wrote a sefer called Deya Es Hashem. Interesting collection of essays. He has a piece in there about the Ma'avol. Different things about the Ma'avol. And he said, I noticed something very interesting. I found a very interesting remez. For those who enjoy a good gematria, he says, I found a very interesting remez. He said, you know, I was curious, the first pasuk of the Torah, the foundation of Hashem revealing himself to the world. Bereishis bara Elokim, Eis HaShemayim Ve'Eis HaAretz. He said, I was curious if there are any other psukim in the Torah that have the same gematria as the opening pasuk of the Chumash. 2701. Bereishis bara Elokim, Eis HaShemayim Ve'Eis HaAretz. So he said, I ran a test. I put it into, you know, they have programs, you put it into a computer. He said, I ran a little test. And it was so interesting. And I found one pasuk that has the exact same gematria. He says, you know what pasuk it is? Take a look and see. It's in the fourth line where it's bolded. It's this week's parsha. Paraches, pasuk yedam. The pasuk says, Uvachodesh hasheni b'shuva ve'esrim yom lachodesh yov shaharetz. You know what that pasuk is? That's the last pasuk before Noah comes out of the table. In other words, what the Torah is hinting to us in a remarkable way, as Noah is about to walk out and have the opportunity to start the world over, Beis Reishis, Hashem had a plan for the world. It was called Bereishis. But it didn't work out exactly. Humanity failed. And Noah said, well, you know, if Hashem couldn't figure it out, now the pressure's on me to figure it out. And the very last pasuk before Noah gets the command to get out of the boat and rebuild the world. And unfortunately, Noah decided, because of his fear, he started with grapes. He was anxious. He was nervous. He drunk himself into a stupor because of what he saw as a pressure to build a beautiful world instead of an opportunity. He didn't have the self-confidence. He took his anxieties with him. He didn't throw them overboard on his way to Australia, so to speak. And because of that, he unfortunately was not successful. But Hashem is hinting through the Torah, as Noach's about to emerge, Hashem says, Noach, let's start from the beginning. It's Chodesh Mar Cheshvan, but it could also be Amar Mar. It could be a start from the beginning. It could be a chance to keep going deeper on what we've experienced so far. And not to be nervous that this is going to be a defilah. Again, to remember that mashal, rochatzka levenshim, every single thing, every effort that we put into Chodesh Tishrei is ours forever, even if we completely fall apart. But let's not have a mindset, let's not have an attitude that things are going to fall apart. Let's borrow from that terminology at the end of Yom Kippur, Hashem Hu Elokim. Hashem Hu Elokim. Let's make it bigger and bigger and bigger. And Amir Tzashem will have tremendous success this year and give incredible nachas to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you very much.